Blog Talk Radio.
Heart-Centered Living and Loving on the Joy Cafe Network. I'm your host, Jim Brown, and today is Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2013, and today is the day we are celebrating Mother's Day on this show, so happy Mother's Day to all of you. I'm going to have two other Joy Cafe Network hosts, maybe, on joining me. They're both moms, Amy and Karen. And Karen is a little nervous because she's babysitting her one-year-old granddaughter. So, and she's out and about, you know, running around the house. So if we don't get Karen, we don't get Karen, and that's just perfectly fine, Karen. Everybody knows you, and everybody knows how I love you and how much I talk about you. So if you need to bow out, you are perfectly welcome to. You're safe. No harm will come to you in this space. My goal every week is to bring more love, more happiness, more joy, more compassion, more peace, and more abundance into your life. Each week I ask you to listen to this show with the goal of taking one thing out of it and implementing it into your daily life. Let's start today with a poem about moms. This is called Things My Mother Taught Me. My mother taught me logic. If you fall off that swing and break your neck, you can't go to the store with me. My mother taught me medicine. If you don't stop crossing your eyes, they're going to freeze that way. My mother taught me to think ahead. If you don't pass your spelling test, you'll never get a good job. My mother taught me ESP. Put your sweater on. Don't you think that I know when you're cold? My mother taught me to meet a challenge. What were you thinking? Answer me when I talk to you. Don't talk back to me. My mother taught me humor. When that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me. My mother taught me how to be an adult. If you don't eat your vegetables, you will never grow up. My mother taught me about sex. How do you think you got here? My mother taught me about genetics. You're just like your father. My mother taught me about my roots. Do you think you were born in a barn? My mother taught me about the wisdom of age. When you get to be my age, you will understand. My mother taught me about anticipation. Just wait until your father gets home. My mother taught me about receiving. You're going to get it when we get home. And my all-time favorite, my mother taught me about justice. One day you'll have kids, and I hope they'll turn out to be just like you. Then you'll see what it's like. I'd like to dedicate today's show or make it a tribute to my wife, Rosemarie, who really is the one who taught me what it is to be a mom, much more so than my mom. And I'm not saying anything about my mom. I just wasn't aware. Rosemarie's been a mom for almost 45 years, and there's a huge difference in the way I think things should be done and the way she thinks they should be done relating to our sons. She always sides with them. Ergo the phrase, blood is thicker than water. So although I really get upset because she sides with them, I admire her for doing it. She defends them no matter what they do. She loves them no matter what. And I know that she suffers on the inside a lot because she thinks every one of their shortcomings is because she was a bad mom. But she never takes any of the credit for any of their successes. Does this sound like anybody out there? My point is, go ahead and love them just the way they are. And realize that everything that happens to your children is between them and God. There's no bad stuff, just experiences to learn from and grow from. So Rosemarie and all you moms out there who are like her, cut yourself some slack. Seriously, really, cut yourself some slack. You've always done the best you can with the resources that you had available at the time. Before we get into this, I want to share with you a story that I read in a paper 2 months ago, and they were getting ready to sell President John Kennedy's memorabilia, and they ran across a letter from his mother. And the letter says, "Dear Jack," and this was written in 1962, and it was before he was going to Mexico. And the letter says, "Dear Jack, you know people like you and I can't eat that kind of food. Tell Jackie to say an act of contrition just in case something happens. Love, Mother." And the author says the letter isn't worth a lot of money, but it shows what life is like. Once a mother, always a mother. And that's why I decided to do this show in honor of moms, because I don't think there's another job on this planet that is as much responsibility and is as long as being a mom. And the whole idea behind this program was for moms to share their joys and to share their sorrows. However, as things always happen, they don't go the way I plan them to go. I talked to 4 different women who are moms who really didn't feel that their mom was a good mom. And Sunday I met a man who was 65 years old, and he had to call his mom, and he couldn't even look at me when he was trying to talk about his mom. So what I decided to do was to create a guided meditation that will hopefully help those who would like to change their perception of their relationship with their mom. Before we do that, I want to suggest to you that when you listen to it on the computer, that adjust your volume so that it's comfortable with you. And afterward, if you want to follow up and call in, our call-in number is 347-324-3497. And this meditation is approximately 9 minutes.
Close your eyes. Put your feet flat on the floor. Take a deep breath and let everything out. Just relax. Let go. Take another deep breath and let out all the stress and tension. With your feet flat on the floor, just let them relax. Relax your ankles. Relax your calves. Relax your knees. Let your thighs relax. Relax your hands. Relax your wrists. Relax your forearms and your upper arms. Let your shoulders just drop down and relax. Relax your chest and the rest of your torso. Let your back relax. Just let it float into your chair. Now relax your face. Relax your cheeks. Relax your mouth. Relax your eyes. And your forehead. And now let's take one more deep breath and let it all out. And I want to imagine yourself sitting in a comfortable place, holding your mom as a little baby. Hold her in your arms. Tell her how beautiful she is. Tell her how much you love her. Tell your mom that she's always loved, no matter what she ever says or does. Tell her that she can do everything she wants to do with her life. Give your mom permission to always place herself as number one, to take care of herself first and foremost. Give her permission to nurture herself whenever she wants to or whenever she needs to. Tell her that when she becomes a mom, she will teach you and any other children she has to love and accept themselves just the way they are. Tell mom that when her children's behavior mandates consequences, that she will also always tell them that she loves them, and that there is nothing they need to say or do to earn that love. Her greatest gift to you and her other children is that she loves you unconditionally, no matter what you ever say or do. Now, give her whatever additional gifts and skills you want her to have in order to be the kind of mom you want her to be. As you kiss her and thank her, watch her grow up. Now she's a woman, and see her giving birth to you. See the joy in her face and in her heart to be able to bring you into the world, and to love you and cherish you and be a role model for you. Now take a few moments to see how your mom raises you by teaching you how to love yourself and nurture yourself. Thank you, Mom, for participating in remaking your history. Before she leaves, she gives you a gift. Open her gift. Take this creation that you and Mom have just made and store this amazing gift of love in your heart and know that this is the way Mom always wanted it to be. She kisses you, and she thanks you. Take a moment to cherish the newborn relationship that you have just co-created with your mom and with God. Now it's time to leave this beautiful scene that you've just created. And remember, you can come back here anytime you want. I'm going to count from 1 to 5. And by the time I get to 5, you're going to be fully awake and alert, fully rested, and ready to go. 1, you feel your feet, you feel your hands, becoming more aware of the room. 2, you start to move your hands and your feet. You're aware of your surroundings. You're aware of the chair you're in. 3, you open your eyes. You're ready. 4, you open your eyes and move your hands and feet. And 5, you're wide awake, clearly here, and back.
Okay. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that. And before I bring in our guest, Karen is off taking care of Lily, who is crying. What I'd like to do is just close my eyes for a moment and talk to my mom, who has already made her transition. And hopefully you can relate to it. Dear Mom, I want to thank you for everything you did and everything you were for me. I don't remember a lot about it. I do remember the things I did wrong. But what I do remember is that you taught me my moral values. You gave me a compass. You gave me a sense of direction. And I guess at the time I didn't realize that I didn't come with an owner's manual. You didn't get a guide on how to be my mom. And Grandma never taught you how to be my mom. I don't remember any of those things. They're all gone. I remember toward the end of your life how we talked and how you were scared. And I'm really happy that I didn't allow your fear to be part of my life. And now I love the fact that we have a great relationship together. And that you and I can teach and learn from each other. And Rosemary taught me more about being a mom because I was open and saw it. But I want to thank you as my mom for an amazing job of loving me, caring for me, taking care of me. And although I didn't particularly care for your worrying about me, it was a great tribute to your love for me. So on behalf of all of us who aren't moms or who, on behalf of all children, I would like to say to every mom, thank you for the amazing gift that you've given us by being our mom, by loving us, by caring for us, and by the amazing responsibility that you took on to be a mom. There's nothing like it. Thank you, and I love you. Now it's time to bring on Amy, who is a mom and a stepmom, who has her own radio show on our network, and she can tell us all about that. And what else do I want to say about Amy? Hi, Amy.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
It's just you and me now.
We were going to
start out with with three, and then it was down to two, and I don't know what's going to happen with Karen because the baby is crying, and you know, I don't know about you, but I don't know how much fun it would be talking about or talking with a one-year-old crying. And I think
the 1-year-old apparently has needs that need met, and that's the gist of being a mom and grandma. So Karen's got to go. That's a sacrifice.
And it's perfect in that sense because that just talks about what it is about being a mom.
Right.
No matter what,
she'll be able to join us.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. So where should we start? How about let's start with the good stuff. What's some of the highlights of being a mom? Or the joys of being a mom?
The joys. For me, I have to list the unconditional love that comes from the kiddos is probably the number one joy and experience. And I also love, 3 was my favorite age because it seemed to me at age 3, their little personalities really blossomed and I got to meet them all over again. They were no longer the terrible toddler, 2-year-old tearing through the house, but somehow 3 was magical and they just became this little individual and they had opinions and it was so much fun to learn who they were and also observe them learn who they were and what they liked and what they didn't like and to communicate that. 3 to 5 probably some of my favorite years, and so that was a joyful time.
Tell me about unconditional love. I mean, I say to people, I think that a newborn baby is as close to unconditional love as we ever experienced because the baby can pee on us, can poop on us, can vomit on us, can keep us up all night. And then it doesn't matter. We just give them our love. And then I think somewhere, and I don't know where, I'm going to say somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months, we start developing expectations. And for many, what happened is when the baby showered us or met our expectations, we showered him or her with our love. But then when they didn't meet our expectations, unknowingly we withheld our love, which I think started most of us out on this lifelong journey of what do I have to do to be lovable?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a dad, and I don't know about the unconditional love thing. It's more conditional type thing. So I'd like to hear more about the unconditional love.
Well, speaking as a mom and also speaking as an intuitive energy coach, because what I seek to do is help people change the way they think and feel about themselves so that they can change the energy that they radiate into the world. Because what happens when you change the message you're sending to the world, you get new and better things in return, right? Like attracts like.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So as a mom, unconditional love to me means that you love them no matter what. And it gets really tricky as they get older because they are independent, we hope, and they are individuals, and they've got their own life path in mind for them. We as individuals may not always agree with it, and it may come with some fear and trepidation, but because we unconditionally love this person, we send them forth with blessings and all the support that we can reasonably give them at that time. And even when they fall and stumble and maybe don't meet our quote-unquote expectations, unconditional love says, you love them anyway. May not like them in the moment, but we love them in the moment.
Uh-huh.
That's my mom view. As an intuitive coach, it's interesting that you use the baby as an example because babies are unconditional love. I think the reason is because they've not learned any other way to be. But
well,
as they do grow, yes, expectations are placed and they sense that, and then that's when the game of, well, what do I need to do to earn approval begins. And so they're not exuding unconditional love for themselves anymore. because they're beginning to learn conditions.
Yeah.
And so their energy is changing, and we, because we're also energetic beings, begin to respond in kind. It starts very, very early. So ultimately, we should all work to get back to that place where we unconditionally love ourselves. Because when we can unconditionally love ourselves, we can have unconditional love for everyone else.
Well,
and until we get there, we can't. I'm sorry?
It has to start there.
It has to.
You can't have unconditional love. I can't have unconditional love for you, but not for me.
Correct. If you did, you'd be living a lie. It would be a falsehood.
Now, one of the things
I
tell
people.
Yeah, well, you're right.
A lot of people go through the motions and they look good on the surface, but it's not altruistic. It's an ego motive, and it just doesn't work.
One of the things when I see one of your approximately 3-year-olds or 2-year-olds with mom and dad, I'll say, "May I share the 4 gifts that she gives you or he gives you?" And they say yes. I says, they love you unconditionally. They forgive and they forget. They have no concept of failure. And no matter what they do, it's an adventure. So now, what would your life be like if you could love unconditionally, if you could forgive and forget, if you had no concept of failure, and no matter what you did, it's an adventure? And then I say, well, we really have this upside down, don't we? They should be teaching us.
Yep.
What is it we're going to teach them? Conditional love, cynicism, criticism, judgment,
yep,
withholding, fear, lack of trust. How do we shift that? How do we become more innocent, like the children are, without having the... the world is... I think the world is whatever we make it to be. Like you were talking
Absolutely.
About... You know, you create the energy, and the analogy I use is, I remember when we had radios and you had a dial and you'd try and tune it in to a certain frequency and it would go, and then you get the frequency, whatever let's say it's 87.9 and that's, a classical radio station. Well, that's all you got on that frequency was that one radio station. And the point is what, to corroborate what you're saying, whatever energy you put out, that's your frequency, and all
that's
that
right.
can come back is that exact energy.
Exactly. Yep. You got it. Yay.
Hey, do I pass?
You got it. You're a quick learner. Yes. That's what I teach people. And how do we get back there? How do we do that? How do we get back to the exuberant child that we came into this world being? And I have to give you great kudos on your meditation. I think it was a wonderful gift that you've given to everyone, and it opens the door for forgiveness, not only of any mom who maybe was brought to mind in that meditation, but also for people who are participating in it. Because I have to say, no matter who raised you, no matter the upbringing you survived or experienced, no matter where you came from or how you came to be, none of that matters right now. Because all of that brought you to this place. And every second that you're here having this physical experience, having this human experience, you are gifted with the opportunity to change your energy, to change your mind about who you are. To continue to blame our past, to continue to blame our parents weren't this, or we didn't have that, or this happened to me. To play that blame game is to continue to be a victim. And when people are victims, they're not taking true ownership of the amazing, perfect creator that they are. And we are all co-creators with whatever creative force you ascribe to. You are a co-creator with that power that brought you into play. this is all part of your grand scheme. You didn't screw this up. Nothing went wrong. It was meant to be this way. Let it all go. Forgive yourself. Boom, here you are. Now from this second forward, do you want to be the perfect power that you are and continue creating life, or you can choose to continue to be the victim? I just loved your meditation because, your meditation gave people the opportunity to release that victim energy and forgive not only whomever but themselves, so that that next second is a new moment. They can choose a new way to live, which will change the thoughts and feelings they have about themselves, which changes their frequency.
Right. So you're saying that life's not a mathematical equation, that what happened yesterday or who you were yesterday does not have to be who you are today.
Exactly.
You can stand here today. Pardon?
I said, I think our past seasons us. Our experiences are opportunities for learning. They should never be opportunities for judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see more people let go of the judgment aspect of it and relish in the experiences, the wisdom that they gained through their experience, and then move forward from there.
Well, sure. I mean, and again, it comes back to the same thing is the victim mentality, which is what society has taught us that life is about. And we get to choose what life's about. It was funny, when we were on the cruise, you know, I did a program on attitude, and then we're getting off the ship, and we must have waited an hour and a half to get through customs. And then I saw a couple of people in front of us who were, you know, who had seen me speak, and they're kind of grousing about how long the line is. I said, well, let's review the talk on attitude. You get to choose right here and right now whether you're going to enjoy being in this line or whether you're going to be upset about being in this line. And either way, it is not going to change the amount of time that you're going to take to get through customs. And that's a key thing. You know, when we're talking about our children, you're talking about, okay, they are who they are. They're going to be who they are. You don't get, you know, you don't get authoritative rights. You chose to be their mother, not to be their dictator. You chose to be their lover and their guide, not to say, no, this is the way it shall be. Because we all know we didn't like that when we were growing up, and certainly they aren't either. And the toughest time, and you have them, don't you, is when they're teenagers.
Sure.
And I've asked thousands of people, who would like to be a teenager again? And I'll bet you, if I asked 5,000 people, not more than 15 or 20 said they would. And
right.
Think about that. If we have the wisdom of hindsight, which is much clearer than when we're going through anything, and we don't want to go back there, how hard it's got to be a teenager.
Well, and think of the pressures that teenagers today face that you and I never imagined. It's scary. Scary world.
Well, I don't... Yeah,
that they're finding their way.
But I remember when our boys are 45 and 40, and I remember when we were raising them, and I remember my mom saying, I wouldn't want to raise kids now. So I have a feeling that that's kind of a generational type of thing.
Okay.
That every generation looks back and says, oh boy, am I glad I'm not raising kids now. I mean, I was born in 45, so I was a teenager in the 60s, and, you know, that was holy mackerel. When I'm wondering, well, I don't know, I didn't, you know, the flower children and Vietnam and all that stuff, and I'm kind of going, well, I was here then, but I don't remember anything being horrible.
Right.
But at any rate, any other joys of being a mom? You said unconditional love.
All kinds of joys, sure. Unconditional love, watching them blossom into their individual selves is so much fun.
Did you try to keep them free?
Oh, no. No.
Okay.
You have to let go. Sorry, yeah.
You don't have to, but it doesn't.
Well, yeah,
make a difference,
for their better health.
Yeah, but we've all seen people who don't want to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the sorrows, too, sometimes is making them toe the line, even though it's breaking your heart to say no, or you have to refrain from giving in to what they want because it's in their best interest, but, you know, you have to endure that. I hate you. I wish I had, you know, all of that stuff.
And we've heard
it. Just go, We have a joke at our house. We're like, okay, we'll pay for your therapy. Go on. That's fine. Go ahead. Go to your room. I'm good. That's hard because they don't understand, and we are coming from a different point of view, and it's sometimes just pointless to try to explain, but that's one of the sorrows. That's what we sign up for.
I think that was my mom's mantra, and that was, honey, someday you'll understand. And with all of my energy, I truly believe that that's God's mantra to all of us, all day, every day. Honey, someday you'll understand. I don't know how this computer works. I don't know how this radio show thing that we're on works. I don't know how my fax machine works, and I really want to know why I can't fax myself to Rome instead of having to go on an airplane. But I accept it. I don't know how my car works. And one of the books that I committed to write on the cruise is I believe in God, but I don't trust him. And I think most of us believe in God, but what good is that if we don't trust that whatever's going on, just like you're talking about with your children, they have to trust you that what's going on is part of their growth process, part of their learning process, part of their maturation process. Well, isn't it the same with us and God?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we God's kids from, you know, the beginning to the end?
Yep.
And we have to do the same thing. Let it go and say, I don't understand this, but I know that no matter what happens, you'll give me the strength and the courage to go through it. And we've seen some of these things. Like the first guest I had on this show was somebody who does pre-birth planning sessions, which we talked about over the weekend. And because I was just shredded by the poor babies from Sandy Hook in Connecticut at 5 or 6 years old being murdered. And we can't make sense with that. In our humanness, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there's where we're challenged to just, as my favorite prayer goes, let go and let God. And let it be. So, let's see what we have here next. Oh, I just talked about that. Uh-huh. Okay, this is a toughie here, Amy. What do you want us husbands to understand about being a mom?
25 hours a day.
How do you compress
that?
Yeah.
And we still need to get some sleep in. So, yeah, motherhood isn't something you just pick up and put down and then move on to something else. It becomes who you are. Well, I shouldn't say becomes who you are. It becomes a part of who you are because you hopefully still are carving out time for yourself to enjoy your own pursuits and still engage with your friends and still commit to being you, the individual, kind of like when you get married. You know, you shouldn't just become absorbed in being a couple. You need to maintain some individuality. I think motherhood's very much the same way, but moms are on call constantly. It just doesn't stop. It maybe as they get older, the calls don't come as frequently because they're more mature and better able to handle themselves, their needs change. But I think every mother would agree that it's a 25-hour day on call gig with really low pay.
One of the things I say when I'm speaking to having a live audience in front of me is, let me see if I understand this. And I'm talking to you as a mom. You wake up in the morning, you got to get dressed, you got to get yourself ready for work, you got to go out, you got to get wake the kids up, you got to make sure the kids get dressed, that their teeth are brushed, that they get their breakfast, that they have their lunch, that you either get them to school or you get them on the bus, then you got to get to work, you got to take care of yourself and do your job all day at work. Then when you get done with work, you may have to go to the cleaners, go to the grocery store, then you got to come home, and then you got to get dinner ready, and then after dinner, you know, either you do get cleaned up or help clean up. You got to make sure the kids are doing their homework, and then you got to make sure the kids get their bath, and then you know, if they're small, they got to get a bedtime story, and then you got to come back down, and now you got to become a sex goddess.
Really?
Yeah, right.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's the way we guys think about it.
Oh yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, men and women look at life from totally different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
And what bothers me is that we haven't gotten to the place as a society of saying, well, let's see how you see it. Let's see how I see it. And seeing it like putting a glove on a hand. And what can I learn from you and what can you learn from me? And neither way is better or neither way is right. But when we can come together and do this as a family, as a joint project, and here you take care of this and I take care of that, and I really need to have a deeper understanding from you of what it means to be a mom. Because from my point of view, as a dad, it's that I'm going to raise you, I'm going to give you the skills that you need, and then when it's time to go, bye-bye, and you're on your own. But like that story I said about Rose Kennedy, I mean, here's the mother of the President of the United States reminding him what he can eat when he visits a foreign country. And I can't imagine a better example of what it means to be a mom. I was speaking in Middletown, Michigan, and my mom lived in Chicago, so I intentionally flew into Chicago, rented a car, and drove there, which is 3-4 hours from Chicago, and was finished at 3 o'clock, and always know myself, and if I'm done speaking at 3, I'd be lucky to get out of there by 4, and get on the road, and there was an accident or something like that, and I called my mom, and I called her it was 7 o'clock, and he says, it doesn't look like I'm able to get there in time to take you out to dinner tonight. Well, somehow she had in her mind I was going to be there at 6. Don't know how she did. So I call her and she says, where have you been? I've been worrying about you for the last hour. And I said, Mom, I'm 58 years old. Well, that didn't make a bit of difference.
No.
Mom was still worried. And that's amazing. I think I don't know that that's good or that, you know, whether that becomes a sorrow or a burden, because for me, what our sons do with their life, I'd like to have an influence, but it's their life, and I'm going to let them lead their life, and there have been plenty of sad things that have happened, but I can't do anything about it, so I just let it go. Whereas it seems that moms have a harder time letting it go. Is that about right?
I don't know. I don't want to, like, jump teams or anything here, Jim, but I kind of agree with you. But I see your mom's point of view. Now, if you'd gotten to your mom's house at 6, she never, ever, ever would have been introduced to that nasty little seed of worry. That's what makes me crazy. For instance, my older son was going to come over here the other night after work. That's fine. He's always welcome to stop by, except that he got off work at 12:45 in the morning. I didn't want him driving because I knew what that meant for me was I wasn't going to sleep until he got here.
Right.
And I was really tired. So I had to text him and say, because, you know, we don't talk to our kids anymore. We text them. I text him and say, you can't come over. Come over in the morning because
right.
I need to sleep. Because
right.
I would have been checking my phone. It just, you know, sorry. But if I had not done that, because that's me being protective of me and him, if I hadn't done that, I would have been not being treating myself lovingly because that worry phase would have started. So I get where your mom's coming from. Well, Jim said he'd be here at 6. Here it is, 6:40.
No, but I haven't heard from him.
You
but
know.
I did
no,
say
you,
I was going to be there at 6.
But somehow she had that
right.
idea and she,
right.
she ran with
and
it.
So I didn't even know because I would if I had said it, I would have called her before 6, letting her know I wasn't going to be there by 6.
Sure. Okay.
But
yeah.
I don't know who she got the idea from, but she didn't get it from me. And it's fun, too, because at one point in my life, I needed to be right. And I don't need to be right anymore. And it's so much fun because when people want to go argue with you about something, like on the cruise, I was telling this group that I don't believe in hell. And some lady says, what if you're wrong? I says, then I'm wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. If you believe in it and I don't believe in it, one thing we know, one of us is wrong.
Right.
You go, so what? You know, in the 1400s,
yeah.
everybody alive believed that the earth was flat. Didn't make it flat, did it?
You know, for moms, too, yeah, we have to be fair. Even though I kind of think like you do, I don't worry about my kids constantly. My oldest son is out forging his own life. He's doing very well. I'm very proud of him. I don't worry about him all the time. When it's appropriate, you know, I do, but I you have to let them go. You have to let them develop their own person. And, you know, with that free time, I've also taken on new activities for myself. So everyone's growing and learning, and it's all good. But moms, you know, we know these little people from the moment they're conceived. And we are tasked with the job of not only nurturing them, but ensuring their survival. I don't want to say dads don't do that, but I wonder if dads don't do it to the same degree.
I would agree.
Where it's an innate protection, and I think that never goes away.
But see, I think
I can't imagine
thing, Amy,
that ever ending.
That you as a mom have the responsibility to communicate that to me as a dad. So that, you know, you can help me have a deeper understanding of what it is to be a mom. Because our society functions on a surface level and it just goes, go, 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 go. Stuff, we got tasks to do. I do a program on balance between what's important and what's urgent. And for most people, what drives their life is what's urgent. And I ask them, list the 5 most important things in your life and put down how much time you spend a week on those. Do you schedule a date with your husband with one child at a time? Whatever it happens to be, that's important. And if somebody calls you and says, gee, Amy, can you do this at 2 o'clock on Thursday? You say, no, I have an appointment. Well, why can't we say that same thing when you have a date with one of your children?
Mm-hmm.
So I think what's important is that we learn to be able to communicate what it means because you have to assume that your husband loves you and that your husband supports you and that he needs to understand what it means to be a mom because I can't. I can only understand what it means to be a dad. But can you help me understand what it means to be a mom?
Can you allow me to play devil's advocate here?
Sure.
And maybe give the guys a point because
yeah.
there's an awful lot of women out there who won't let go of the control. in order for me to really explain what it's like, don't I have to let you experience it? Here, you do this, and I've got to let go of my need to see the kids clean. I've got to let go of my need to see the kids fed at a certain time. I've got to let go what I think is right to allow you or any other dad, you know, to step in and give it a go. And I think a lot of women have a hard time with that.
But kids play in this too, and I'll give you our example. Rosemary is a pharmacist, so we were both able to work, and I worked days, and she worked PMs. So we didn't see each other except on Saturday and Sunday, because she would leave for work at 3:30, I think, or 2 o'clock, or whatever time it was, and get home at 1 o'clock in the morning. So we'd have the kids with a babysitter for an hour and a half. I'd get home. I would do everything. We would do their homework. They would get a bath. They would get a snack. They'd get dinner. So if their bedtime was 8 o'clock, and one of them would say, can we have a snack, Dad? And I say, well, what time is it? And they'll say, 8 o'clock. I said, so what's the answer? And they say, well, no. So they knew that they had to go to bed. We had everything. And I'd say, okay, it's time for your bath. Boom, they go get their bath. Saturday night comes, I say, it's time for your bath. Mom! Would you help me?
Oh, yeah.
So they know how to play the game. And I'll ask everybody out there, when you were a kid, who was easier to get a yes from, Mom or Dad? And everybody knows the answer to that. So the kids play a game on the dynamic, too.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I agree with you. It's a joint project to raise them, and we have to discuss what it means and agree on a common strategy for dealing with problems and issues. We have somebody on the line, but that person hasn't indicated they wanted to talk. They're in the 631 area code. So whoever you are in 631, if you want to talk, I think you have to press a 1. Oop, the question mark just went away. Oh, the question mark is back. I don't know what the question mark means. What does the question mark mean, Amy?
I think it means that they had a question for you.
Should we check? I thought they had to do it.
Yeah.
They were supposed to do a 1. Okay. Let's see what they have. Here we go. 631.
Hi, I just was listening, and I did have a question.
Oh, good.
Well,
what's your name?
It was about moms and sons and things like that.
Okay.
Well, I was divorced when my son was like a year and a half, 2 years old, and I left because I just needed to, and I took my son, and then my ex just was like fighting for my son all the time, and he got the house because it was his, so I didn't get anything, and I took care of my son, and then he finally just fought so much, not that I was a bad mom or anything, it cost a lot, and so he's had him for the past 2.5 years, and I've just had the couple of weekends and stuff, and I would like him back, but how do you get over that? Because he won't even talk to me, and he just badmouths me all the time for 2 years now. I mean, my son's 12, and I'm not used to it. 2.5 years now.
Wow. Jim, can I take this?
Go right ahead. Why am I sitting here silently? What's your name?
Angela.
Okay.
Hi,
Angela.
Well, I'm sorry that your ex can't play nice, first of all, because as hard as it is, we should never trash the other parent in front of our kids. I know it happens, but I'm sorry when it does. And I'm sorry that that's been your experience. Understand, too, that you're kind of going through empty nest a lot earlier than you planned on.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really hard. That's really,
yeah.
really, really hard. You figured you had a good, 8, 9 years yet.
Yeah, he was
you're
only almost
boy. 10. Yeah. So it's hard. You're going through empty nesting really early. And what else is hard is that during this time, this 10-year-old boy is starting to come into young manhood. And
he's now.
Yeah, his perspective on life is changing, his body's changing, his whole world is changing as a result, and the mom in us wants to be there. know, fixing everything, and we can't. So I, my heart goes out to you, girl, because you've got a lot going on in addition to just plain old missing your kiddo. If it's not too much personal information to ask, I mean, is, how's your relationship with your son? Is it still good?
No, it's good. But I guess, you know, he plays on, like, he has the bigger house, the dad, and the chickens and all that, and now he's going to get remarried for the third time, so he's going to have that, and I live in an apartment. I haven't met anyone. So it's, you know, it's been 10 years that I've been divorced, 11 years.
Yeah, well, don't get into any kind of competition energy with the ex. It just isn't worth it. And whatever the 12-year-old mind can conceive in the moment, you know, we just kind of have to go with it. And we've got to have a lot of faith that when they're 21, 22, 23, when they've got their own kids, I don't know about you, but I didn't really understand what it meant to be a mom until I had my own kiddo. Then it was like, whoa, this is what it's about? Oh, man, you know, because you've never had to think about it before. So have faith that your son knows the real deal.
Kids, yeah, but it's like I'm getting older and have kids anymore.
So I'm sorry?
And I'm older,
yeah.
So I can't have any kids anymore.
Oh, you're not old. Hush up.
Well, you can always adopt them.
Not on my own. I can't even. I can't afford that. On my own, no way, Jose.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
You know, this is time for you, Angela. You know, this is time for you to take some of the energy that maybe has been. And then I'm just assuming here. This is nothing intuitive about you. I'm not saying that this is the case, but maybe you've been taking some of your personal energy and putting it into things that aren't bringing you a lot of positive?
No, not at all.
Not coming.
I see friends, I see my son. It's not that. It's that, you know, he's not in my life every morning and stuff. It has nothing to do with things that I'm doing wrong.
Right. No, good. Well, I'm glad you're not beating yourself up in any way at all. But you've got a lot of extra energy now, and maybe you can start putting that into activities that will...
I know. You know what it is? It's just hard because I didn't have them until I was 40, so I had all that time to do all that.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? It's not like I had them at 20 and you know what I mean. So it's like I did all that, the dating, the going out, the, well, not party. I'm just saying the activities. I've been there. I wanted the family life.
Mm.
Now I'm 52 and don't have it.
I'm sorry. Well, you do. It's just not maybe what you expected.
I think that for most of us, much of the time, our expectations are what create an enormous amount of disappointment in our life. And you have every right to have a baby and expect that you're going to have a husband and you're going to raise that child together. And then when that doesn't happen, the challenge becomes, okay, how to adapt to the way it is? And you don't have any influence on his father. But you
I'm adapting. If I had him, I had him for the first almost 10 years where I had the residential custody. And now it's adapting of not having that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't care if I don't have him or ever seen or, you know, whatever. It's been a long time. He's not a nice person. But now he thinks he's the only parent. And he's influencing my son on that.
Well, your challenge, like Amy is saying, is to love your son when he comes and to let him know, you know, don't, like Amy is saying, don't badmouth his father. It's his father. And he shouldn't be forced to be in a competition between loving mom and dad. And you just let him know how happy you are to have him, whatever period of time you have him. And embrace that time and cherish that time in between the times that he's not there with you.
No, I do that, but it still doesn't make up for it.
Make up for what, Angela?
Him being in my life every day.
Okay, so you're feeling the void. You don't have this person to nurture every day. Can you take that energy that you used to give when he was there every morning, all that you did for him, how can you channel that to something different that will make you feel better about you?
There's really not, because you can go to a health spa, you can go to a gym, you can walk with friends, you can have friends or a boyfriend in your life, whatever, but it doesn't, it's not the same. You can work, you can work two jobs, it's not the same.
Have you ever thought about volunteering? No, doesn't spark your boat. Yes, it's something where you're giving all of this amazing love that you have and sharing it with others. Not the same.
No, it's
darn
not.
Close. No, but it's darn close. Just because your situation's not what you thought doesn't mean you've got to stop. And I really encourage you to take all of this frustration, which is an energy, it's a form of energy, and find a new avenue to express it, and find it in an avenue that's going to benefit you, that's going to bring good energy back to you, that's going to blossom and enrich your life. Because, girlfriend, when you're feeling enriched and you're feeling more loving toward yourself, that's only going to benefit your boy.
Okay. I hope that helps. Unfortunately, we can't, you know, fix it for you, and we're sorry about that. And, you know, in letting you go, I'd just like to say that I just encourage you to see the love and see the beauty in your life, and focus on the love and the beauty and the relationship you have with your son, and not focus on what you don't have. Thanks for calling, and we'll move on to our next caller. Okay.
Hi.
What do we have here? It looks like a Skype call. The first time I saw this 11111 thing, I said, what the heck?
No, it's actually Danny. I'm in the chat.
I don't know.
I can relate to that caller.
Okay.
It's not typical for a mother to not have custody of her child, and I'm going through the same thing. Well, I've been through the same thing, I should say. I had my daughter taken from me because the father had, more money than I did. I left that relationship because he was controlling and a little bit psychotic, maybe.
Oh, no.
not psychotic, but just with me, not with the child. But
good.
It was just not.
I mean,
it was a toxic relationship, and I ended up leaving him. I left with my child and nothing else but our clothes and, you know, my belongings. And
<You're home.
laughs> yeah. Oh no, those are my other two boys. I've had two since that relationship.
Oh,
but,
okay.
I think what she is feeling is.
And I'm sorry, I didn't see your note about keeping her on the phone if I brought you in.
Well, I hope she's still listening, but.
Oh, I hope so too.
She can
always call back.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, as a mother, people, when they hear that you don't have your child or you don't have custody of your child, automatically somebody thinks that you've done something wrong. Because why would a judge?
Oh, I disagree. Yeah.
Well,
if that's ever been your experience, Danny, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that was the.
That's so good.
I mean, that was like the first thing out of everybody's mouth was, well, what did you do that they gave it, you know, your daughter to the father? Well, it just happened to play out that, you know, he had a lawyer, and they did it kind of tricky to me, to where, you know, paperwork got filed on him or, you know, first, and it just didn't play out in my favor, basically.
I'm sorry that you have that judgment against you, because it's not true. Oh.
Well, and the worst part about it was, and I can relate with him bashing her, because my daughter's father actually told my daughter that I left and I took everything but her. Now, she was only two at the time, but that wasn't true. I took her with me. You know what I mean? It's just, and there's also that, not so much guilt, but it's just like, I don't know how to explain it. I knew what I was thinking when she was on the phone, and I kind of lost my train of thought. But as a mother, you feel kind of defeated. Like, you're supposed to be there for your child, you know, regardless of, you know, whatever goes on between you and a spouse. I mean, but there, I mean, me and the father get along great now, but of course it's been years, you know, and I
sure.
And, but it, and the good thing is that my daughter never, she never, I think she always knew, you know, she, her dad would bash me, but she knew, you know,
they
otherwise.
They have a resiliency. They're innately tuned. They're,
yeah.
They haven't turned that off yet. They haven't become jaded yet, and they see the truth. And I have to throw this in, Danny, for you and Angela both. I don't want you guys to think that I've been married forever and I've got this idyllic life. The same thing happened to me. My son moved in with his dad when he was 12, and his dad and I, luckily, everything was good, but he had remarried, and that wasn't very pleasant.
Yeah.
And she bashed me. So I don't want you guys to think that I'm on this high horse saying, oh, you got to move on, blah, blah, blah. Like I took Angela's call because I've been there.
Yeah.
And I know what she's feeling. I really do. But I'm hoping that I'm able to give some hindsight because many years have passed for me. And I know what my relationship with my child is like now. And they see through it.
Yeah, they
and
do.
And they know. They really do. And I do know her pain, and I'm really sorry for your pain that people make those assumptions. It's hard when you're single and the money's not there to front a huge legal team. What do you do?
Can I make a comment about that, Danny?
Sure.
When I first started speaking, my biggest fear was that somebody in the audience would have a question and I wouldn't have the answer to it. And I ran across a book by Terry Cole Whitaker. And the title of the book is What You Think of Me Is None of My Business.
My business, yeah.
And that had a huge impact on me, and I think the same would be for you. What those people think of you as a mother is none of your business.
Right, and that's
you
not
know
right.
Who you
right.
are.
That yeah. took me a long time to figure out, but that was the only way I was going to get through it. You know, I kept fighting everybody and trying to, like, telling my story everywhere, just trying to make myself feel better. But that wasn't, you're right. I mean, it's not my business, you know. Like,
no.
I don't need to spend all this energy telling you what happened and why. And I know in my heart of hearts that it wasn't through anything that I did. You know,
right.
It was just me trying to actually better a life for her because we were in a toxic relationship. And, you know, it just turns out that he, you know, where she is actually better. I mean, he has money. He can give her things that I can't. And, I mean, she has a good life. He is a good father. He is, and all the pain he's put me through, I can definitely say he is a good father, hands down. Like, that to me is most important. So I forgive him for everything, you know.
Danny, you succeeded. I mean, you've been successful, too. You were able to take your hurt and your emptiness feelings and all of that, and you were able to channel it somewhere else because I hear other kiddos in the background.
Yeah.
You move
yeah, you do.
On with your life. And that's
and what they remind me of is when I was a kid, I knew how long the telephone cord was. You know, and we would horse around just outside of that. And I'm picturing you trying to get to these kids with the look on your face saying, will you guys be quiet?
Oh, all I have to do is point my finger and furrow my brow
yeah.
to know exactly what I'm saying. It's like a sign language we have.
Yeah, or like I said earlier, you know, like, wait till I get off the phone. But it wasn't that part of the poem. It was, you know, wait till we get home. But that version is, wait till I get off the phone. You guys are really in trouble.
Danny, in your success, what would you share with Angela? How can you help her get where you are?
Well, I mean, it's just a lot of going inside yourself and knowing that, you know, it's not, I don't know, I guess, I don't know exactly what, you know, is going on with her, but I can just say that, just like what you just said, what people think of you is none of your business. You know, I mean, he can bash you all he wants, but just as long as her son knows that, you know, she loves him, and it's not because she didn't go away because, you know, anything, and it wasn't his fault, she'll be fine. It just takes time.
Exactly. Yep.
So.
Well, and I want to piggyback on what's something that Amy was talking about earlier, and that is that we're co-creators. And
exactly.
What we tend to think about, because society has taught us we're victims, and it's poor me, and poor my son, and poor my this and that. And what if that was the scenario that your children created before they came on Earth?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's exactly right. And who's to say that this didn't happen because something... I don't even know who my son's calling.
We know.
He's like Stewie from Family Guy. I'm just going to mute him real quick.
What happened?
I just had him,
to take care of her child.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask him, because if I didn't ask him what he wanted, then he wouldn't have stopped.
Yeah, we know. How did you do it with the furrows, though?
The what?
The furrows on your forehead, you said, you know.
Oh, I just get this look on my face like I mean business. I mean, my mom used to do it to me.
I never thought my mom was tough, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't hit my kids, and I don't, you know, think people should, but I think this look has the same effect.
But my mom used to say, if looks could kill, I'd be dead now. So I guess that works both ways, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think to wrap this all together, I mean, Danny, thank you so much for calling. I think everybody's on par. You know, these children chose us as parents. These children chose their life experiences. And while it might cause us great pain, sometimes we've just got to become the best people we can be, because if we're better people, we'll be better parents, and that's ultimately what these kids deserve. So
right.
We have to overlook our pain and step beyond it and continue to be awesome people in the world. That'll just make us incredible parents,
right.
And that's leading by example. So it's all good.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Well, thank you for letting me talk. Thank
You're
you.
Take
Thanks
care
for calling.
Of the boys now.
I'm going.
I'm going to continue my message. Go ahead. Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, bye-bye.
One of my favorite prayers or poems, and I'm going to ask you when I finish what yours is Footprints. And I, for years, would use Footprints as a closing in my talks. And I would just simply not look at the audience and say, Footprints is a poem or a prayer about a man who is having a dream, and in his dream he's on the beach and he's looking at all the scenes of his life, and he sees that in every scene of his life there's two sets of footprints. Then he notices over way over there that there's the last scene of his life, there's only one set of footprints. Then he looks back and he sees that every time there's a whole bunch of places where there's only one set of footprints, and every time it was when it was a hard time in his life. And he turns to God and he looks at him, he says, hey God, you promised me If I followed you, you would take care of me. And every time it's the hard time of my life, I see only one set of footprints. He said, what did you do? Did you abandon me? And then I turn as if, you know, I'm God, and I put my hands on his cheeks and say, no, honey, when you only see one set of footprints, that's when I carried you. Then I stop, and I turn to the audience and say, close your eyes. Climb up on God's back. Wrap your arms around his chest. Wrap your legs around his waist. And know that no matter what is happening, he will carry you through it. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to have that kind of visual to get that when we're going through this terrible stuff of, you know, it didn't work out the way we intended it to work out, that we need to have something to know what's going on. My favorite quote is from a book called A Course in Miracles. And the quote is, "What could you not accept if you but knew everything that happens to you, past, present, and to come, is gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good?" What that means to me is, what couldn't you accept if you know everything is a gift from God? When you do that, you ask the question, "Hey God, how is this a gift?" And you keep asking the question until you get an answer. And that's going to lead you down a much rosier path than why me.
Yep.
So what's your favorite prayer?
Oh, my favorite
Mom.
Prayer? I don't know. Huh?
Mom.
I think I'm a favorite poem more so than favorite prayer. Although
okay.
The Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer
yeah.
is right up there.
I like the
wisdom,
the wisdom line.
Yeah. The Robert Frost poem, Two Roads Diverged in a Wood, and I can't remember all the words, took the less traveled. That's my favorite poem. A bridge. In summary, those are my cliff notes.
Oh, okay. What are some of the sorrows of being a mom?
Well, gosh, didn't we have just two amazing examples?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
and yours
my
too.
Heart goes out. Yeah, well,
yeah.
You know, but it's all good now. There really is moving forward. You gotta work through the hurt. And it's horrible when you're hurting to hear someone say, "Come on, you gotta move forward." That's not what a lot of people want to hear. It hurts. So there's a great deal of sorrows, and gosh, imagine all the moms who are seeing children destroy themselves through drug addiction or alcohol addiction or bad relationships. And there's all kinds of opportunities for mothers to have broken hearts, but they've got to take faith. And what you said at the top of the show was perfect, that whatever struggle is happening between your child in their life, it's between them and God. And same goes with ex-husbands and whomever else is in the picture. Everyone has their own responsibility as a co-creative individual to create themselves to be the best that they can be, because then they will see the best in others and respond in kind. And in that way, we can just make everything better.
And I think that's so true. That's one of the things I love about flying, is that it's always sunny when you're flying.
Right.
And the sun is always shining, but sometimes because of whatever the problem is, we don't think it's up there. And it's always there. It's always there. We have to believe, we have to have faith, and we always have to hope. And one of my favorite phrases is, "This too shall pass." No matter what we're talking about, this too shall pass. Like you said, when you were going through the pain, I'm sure there were times where you would have argued against that. And now,
absolutely.
You look back and you say, it did pass. And
yeah.
We all survived, and I'm stronger and better because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're moving right along here. We could play a song. You want a song, or you want to just... No, we're pretty close to the end, I think. are you up for any more questions, or you're about questioned out?
I don't know. I kind of feel questioned out.
Okay.
I'll be honest. I feel questioned out.
Well, that's
out.
Fine. Be honest. I don't know. I mean, that's it. You're not going to get your $200,000 for this interview then.
Yeah, okay, good. Oh, man.
And the funny thing is, the things that we talked about, we were talking about, and you're talking about love, and the show next week I'm going to do is going to be on self-love. And
well, can I put in a plug for my show next week?
You bet
because
you
what
can.
What I'm going to talk about next week is stop playing the victim. Yeah.
Okay.
Stop playing the blame game.
So tell them when your show is.
Well, yeah, I am on Blog Talk Radio on the Joy Cafe Network every other Friday evening at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, U.S.
That's not Standard
and,
Time. You're like Karen.
Oh, I'm not Standard
Time. It's Daylight Time.
Eastern. Okay.
Eastern. It's still Daylight Time.
Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Eastern every other Friday night. So not this week, but next week. And that show
the
is about
is
dropping...
The 24th.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to be talking about dropping the blame, because when we place blame, we're giving all of our power away.
Absolutely.
And no, there's a better way. So we'll talk
Absolutely.
About that, and I'll take callers on that show, too. So it all kind of it ties together.
Well, I think it's all simple, and I think that because of the role our ego plays in our life, that we have a tendency to complicate it. And, because my definition of the ego is that part of myself whose job it is to keep me in a constant state of chaos. And my ego's gotten an A+. Okay?
Yeah.
And when we get, when all that stuff is happening, when we're playing the blame game, that's our ego.
Yeah.
And the analogy I like to use is that where we want to be is in the eye of the hurricane. Because in the eye of the hurricane, there is perfect calm and there's perfect peace. And when we feel the storm getting toward us, we need to recognize that what's going on here is that our ego's getting involved and we're playing this blame game, we're playing the victim game, we're playing all that stuff. Let's pull it back into center. What is my center? And how do I recognize when I'm off center and how do I get back on center?
It's like what you said about being a child. Practice unconditional love for yourself and take every experience as a learning opportunity for yourself.
So that means I got to forgive myself? I got to stop judging myself? I got
to
stop criticizing myself?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know that takes a lot of time.
But I get to stay stuck if I do all that stuff.
I know. And then if you stop doing all that stuff, then you've got all this time on your hands that you don't know how to fill because you don't really know who you are. I know. It's hard.
But it's a way to help. But that's what I know. I know being a victim. I know being stuck. People feel sorry for me when it's woe is me.
Yeah.
But
I came here
for a higher purpose. And my sense of loyalty and devotion to my Creator says that I have to put this behind because I made a promise to do certain things. And because of my love of God, I am committed to fulfilling my promise in my relationship and in our life. And therefore, I need to be open to learning from people like you what I need to do to change my victim mentality into it's time to accept my inheritance and to accept my power and to trust myself and to trust that I will be able to use this power for the highest and the greatest good of everybody involved.
Amen.
Amen. You are healed. Okay, so do you want to stay on for the last couple minutes, or should I let you go and wrap this show up?
Oh, I'm going to ask you to let me go with my thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed your meditation. I appreciate Angela and Danny both calling in. Love and blessings to both of you women, and hopefully some of your listeners will join me next Friday the 24th on my show, Positive Living, and yeah. It's been a blast, Jim. Thank you.
How do they email you to get a notice of your show?
They can reach me at Amy, A-M-Y, at coachingtoserve, S-E-R-V as in Victor, E.com.
Okay, and then you'll put them on your mailing list so they'll get a notice of your show.
Sure.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, so it's down to you and me, and we don't have any other callers, so we've been doing this for a long time. Before I go, I know Noreen listens to the show every week, and Noreen, I worked out with her husband, Paul, for 10 years, and remember just before Brianna was born, so I've known Brianna since before she was born. And Saturday, Noreen sent me, Brianna is 16, I don't think she's 17 yet. No, she's not 17. Sent me a video of Brianna doing her first solo flight as a helicopter pilot at 16. Now, here's an amazing teenager, and she's going to have to come over because she's near to me, and she's shy. This woman has, she's a qualified now to be a helicopter pilot. She is an accomplished violinist. She's a great Irish dancer, and she does documentaries. And we need to get her to step up to the plate and accept her role as a leader. And Brianna, congratulations. We're proud of you. Well, what I want to do is to bring this to a close and let you know that next Tuesday, which is May 21st, we're going to just have the hour show again. And it, like I mentioned earlier, it's from 2 to 3 Pacific Daylight Time, and we will be talking about self-love. I would like to close with a poem for you moms. You are the sunlight in my day. You are the moon I see far away. You are the tree I lean upon. You are the one that makes troubles be gone. You are the one who taught me life, how not to fight and what is right. You are the words inside my song. You are my love, my life, my mom. You are the one who cares for me. You are the eyes that help me see. You are the one who knows me best. When it's time to have fun and when it's time to rest, you are the one who has helped me to dream. You hear my heart and you hear my screams, afraid of life but looking for love. I am blessed, for God sent you from above. You are my friend, my heart, and my soul. You are the greatest friend I know. You are the words inside my song. You are my love, my life, my mom. It's a poem called A Poem for Mom. And I have it if you want me to email it to you, but I don't have the author here. Anyway, as I always close, I send my love from your heart, from my heart to your heart. Please receive this love and share it with everybody. We have an infinite supply of love, and it's our love that's going to change the world. Change your world by sharing your love with everybody you talk to and you see every single day. Thank you, and we'll see you next Tuesday.